Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. As always, I am your host, Robert Vallejos, and I'm joined this week by my tag team partner, Rick Monsey. Rick, how's it going today?
Doing pretty good, Robert. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm great. We're just hours out of UFC 228. We got the NFL season starting today. We got another event to break down. I feel like as a show, we're back on track. We're back in our zone because we actually have shows coming up after the appreciated but very dormant month of August that we just had. So I'm glad to get back to it. And if you want to get to it, hit us up on Twitter at MMA Torch and at MMA Livecast. That's at MMA LiveCast. And if you want to send us an email, we got a whole segment today built around an email. That's also MMA Livecast, but it's MMA Livecast at gmail.com. That is MMA LiveCast at gmail.com. All right, Rick, let's get right into it. We have a ton of stuff to talk about. Like I mentioned, we're recording this on Sunday morning, just hours after UFC 228. All right, and I know you were perhaps the least enthusiastic person on the panel last week that included Zach Haydorn about this card. Were you persuaded, or do you feel the same way about this card as you did going into it, as you do now coming out?
No, I'll take my medicine. I was pleasantly surprised that this fight card ended up being as good as it was. I mean, I've even heard analysts say this is one of the better fight cards of the year. And I don't know if I'd go that far, but it was definitely better than I thought it was going to be, especially after halfway through the past week happened and we found out we lost our co-main. Then I really felt like I was proven right. I felt super vindicated. But then as soon as the televised prelims started, I was like, yeah, I'm going to be wrong. And it just continued to be entertaining throughout the night. So I'm happily going to admit that I was predicting doom and gloom, but we actually got a pretty decent fight card.
Yeah, I was thinking about you the whole night. And like this whole card was a rebuke of you personally. I felt the way it was all turning out well and the way the main event turned out. I think that was all that was very anti-Monsey in the way that the UFC presented the card.
I'd like to think Dana White gave like a pep rally before the card started, and he was like, listen guys, to all the fighters, there's this one annoying analyst who thinks this fight card's gonna suck, you know, just prove him wrong. And so they did. I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch.
Well, we know friend of the show Dana White definitely listens every week religiously. Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern, he's got that his app open. He's ready to go. But yeah, it was a weird night too. Like weird stuff happened, but in a good way, not in a strange MMA way where unexplainable stuff happened. You had some really wild submissions of, you know, people getting split in two, and then you had some devastating knockouts. And overall, just a really good night of fights. Whereas in the Jimmy Rivera John Dodson fight, which wasn't completely boring, but kind of was the two guys dancing around a lot, the crowd got really impatient, and DC kind of made a note on commentary, like, you know, you guys have been spoiled tonight, so suddenly that's why they were turning on that fight, which I thought was an interesting way to put it. But let's talk about what happened at the top and all the chatter that has surrounded the card since it happened. Yeah, Tyron Woodley taking out Darren Till via submission at 4:19 of the second round. The first round, very tentative on both guys, kind of what, you know, someone like you, Rick, really would have feared that this card would have had. A big size difference between the two as well, and I think that played into it, where Woodley was aggressive, but there's only so much you could do to a guy that's so much bigger than you the way Till was. But when we got to that second round, some of the hand shots that Woodley landed got Till down. Woodley did his work on top and eventually got in the Darce choke for the win. What'd you think of this fight, Rick?
Well, let's just look at the stats. I mean, like you mentioned, the first round, a little tentative. You had Woodley. He had total strikes of 16 strikes out of 28. And Darren Till had a whopping one strike land out of four attempts, 25%. Heath landed one punch. So as tentative as Tyron Woodley was, and as much as I've been a critic of him for being tentative, Darren Till like blew that out of the water. He literally almost did nothing in that first round. And I know that he was being wary of Tyron Woodley's takedown attempts. Tyron tried to get Darren Till down four times, but none of it amounted to anything. But still, it's just, you know, he just, it's almost like he was anticipating a 5-round fight and he was like, I'll give him the first one. But that was incredible and just really concerned me. But then when we went to round two, you know, we got Tyron Woodley getting his, I guess it wasn't a takedown, it was a knockdown. And when he knocked him down, he landed 58 strikes of 69, which is a really good strike percentage. That's 85% of his strikes landing. And 46 of those were significant strikes. So that was getting a lot of damage and ground and pound onto Darren Till. And Darren Till landed zero strikes, zero knockout, zero kicks, anything. And he was controlled on the ground for 4 minutes and 5 seconds before he was submitted. And that was just about as dominant a second round as you could possibly have. And I was surprised. And there was, you know, like I said, this is a big Wangs fight for sure. When that main event started and as the first round wrapped up and the second round was happening, there was a clear divide in the bar I was watching this at. There were some people who were real big time Tyron Woodley haters, and there he had his majority of supporters as well. And so it was an interesting atmosphere to watch this one with a group of people who were split like that. But by the end of it, when Tyron Woodley had his hand raised, I was hearing it from all the Tyron Woodley fans. And I was, like I said earlier, eating my medicine because that was such an impressive performance and his best, in my opinion, performance of his title reign.
Yeah, that was it was really something, the way he was able to get things done. And I think he was very strategic in with the size difference of the window, what he had to do, and not being a victim of the range of Darren Till throughout the fight. Even though the commentary didn't note that they actually technically have the same amount of reach, but it's just, you know, one guy's, as our poster so expertly pointed out, one guy's so much bigger than the other. Let's talk about let's talk about Darren Till first, then we'll go back to Woodley. Darren Till, last week, we kind of said, felt like I wouldn't say an undeserving challenger, but an underwhelming challenger. And, you know, a guy that won his last fight, missed weight going into it. There was so much talk about Darren Till's weight. And he ended up not being the story for the weigh-ins, believe it or not. He came in on weight and actually looked like he got significantly bigger by the time fight night rolled around. What do we make of Till at this point, though? Because is it validated that he wasn't ready, or was something else going on? Like, what was up with Till in this fight?
Yeah, it was hard to put it was hard for me to put my finger on it, but I think he was just overly concerned about the takedowns, which I get. Tyron Woodley's the champ for a reason, but he showed a little tentativeness against Wonder Boy because Wonder Boy was in his previous fight was an expert striker, and so he. You know, he showed some maturity and strategy for such a young fighter, but it almost kind of he showed too much in this fight. I mean, if he would have the one punch I remember him connecting with Tyrone in the first round connected clean and looked good. So, I mean, if he would have just found a way to get his hands free a little bit, he might have had more success. Him as a fighter, though, I think he should stop trying to make this welterweight division weight limit and just move up the middleweight. A lot of people are saying he might not even be big enough and muscular enough for the middleweight division, but I mean, I think he's a little emaciated by the time he steps into the octagon, and he can translate some of his striking and his power with some added pounds and have more success up there. So I think it was a good go for welterweight. He was undefeated for a reason, but he needs to change weight classes and stop worrying so much about making weight and start worrying about not being so tentative in the future. I mean, a lot of people are talking about him versus Usman as a possible fight. I don't really want to see that because I think it's more of just him being tentative around a really good wrestler and a really good striker, and I think he should just try greener pastures.
Yeah, that's not a bad suggestion, and he had kind of indicated that that's what he was eventually going to do, and then last night he backed off on that a little bit. I think with his size, it will give him an advantage over the lower-tiered fighters in the welterweight division because he has that size, and he is pretty skilled. You know, we don't want to completely sell him short, but I think we saw last night once you get into those championship-level fights, some of those things can get exposed, whereas at middleweight, yeah, it's like, you know, how would that look with him facing Chris Weidman? You know, I don't know if he would look tiny. I don't think he would. He's a big dude. Like, so I think he could probably do okay in the middleweight division. And he's young. I mean, they mentioned it about 15 times last night. He's only 25. So I would think he still has some time to make good on whatever his potential is. Let's turn the page, though, and talk about Tyron Woodley. We spent a whole segment last week on Tyron Woodley and, you know, his disconnection with the audience and why that is. We offered some points and some counterpoints, and you noted, like, at the bar you were at, that there was a pretty good pro-Tyron contingency. Do you think the tide in general is turning? Do you think last night is going to go a long way till turning that tide? Or are we just in the moment now, and then in 2 weeks people will go back to not liking Tyron Woodley again?
I feel like this helps, but we're kind of in the moment right now in the afterglow of the pay-per-view. Styles make fights, and opponents can sometimes make the champion or the challenger more popular. You know, sometimes the perfect pairing just help things out. And Tyron Woodley's future, if they pit him against Colby Covington, I don't know if that helps or hurts him. That could get him more fantasy support because Colby Covington is so universally hated. But that would be the only situation where I think Tyron Woodley would be favorite from the fans' perspective. I mean, if he goes up against some of these other welterweights, I see them taking their side as opposed to Tyron's. But I personally have, you know, eased up a little bit on my skepticism of Tyron Woodley's entertainment value, because I was thoroughly entertained in that fight. And it was interesting to see, you know, he's not the biggest guy, but he's compact and muscular, and he has this kind of spring coil action to him. We saw that in the Wonder Boy fight too, where he just like, he's just ready to spring. And then when he finds that moment, he uncoils, and it's just devastating and fast. And I just wish he could find those opportunities in those moments earlier, like he did against Darren Till and against Robbie Lawler, and a couple moments against Wonder Boy, because that's what's exciting and interesting about him. But sometimes we get a lot of the in between in his fights, so we'll see. You know, I don't want to call it a renaissance for Woodley quite yet.
I think if anything, last night what it did was shushed the skeptics that he's not a great fighter, which I don't know why. And I think the true criticism never really said that. I think that's just the troll criticism had said that about him. Everyone knew he was a really good fighter, and like you said, he was champ for a reason. I think last night was kind of just a reminder to that. And if people, you know, want to say he's been bored, I don't know how bored he's really has been. And we discussed last week that there is moments that he can be very boring. He's more of a guy that will just do whatever it takes to win the fight. And in some cases, it'll be like last night where it's very thrilling. And in some cases, it'll be like against Damian Maia where it's extremely boring. It just kind of, it's very situational with him. Like you said, styles make fights. If you still think he's been on balance, a boring fighter, I still think that's a legitimate take to have today. I don't think last night completely changes it, but I do think the level of respect for him, begrudgingly or not, from a lot of people grew last night. Kind of like what's happened with Cormier in the last year. Obviously beating Stipe really, really helps that. But I think people have really now started to come around on Daniel Cormier, that he's just an extremely skilled mixed martial artist beyond how you feel about him, if you like him or you don't like him. And I think that's the place we're at with Woodley. Yeah, a lot of talk last night about Covington being the next appointment. He kind of, sort of, but not really is the interim champ. But I'm sure they will sell it as such whenever that fight comes around. Tweeting about it last night from Covington. Will that turn the tide in this fan support for Tyron Woodley? I mean, it seems like if in that fight, I hate to be so crass about it, but if you're a Colby Covington supporter in that fight, you're going to be kind of a jerk. Like, there's no other way to paint it in that fight. So will that be a reason for people to rally around Woodley? Or will it be sort of an indifference if, you know, people don't like Covington and what he stands for and what he says, but haven't gravitated towards Woodley? Is that also a possibility?
Yeah, I think they're both possibilities. And I think one big factor into it is when this fight and where this fight actually takes place. Because I heard rumblings that since, you know, Tyron Woodley only took one punch, he could be turned around pretty quickly. And we still may need a main event for November. And Colby Covington, in theory, would be ready by then. So there's a chance that this could headline the Madison Square Garden card. And in that case, you know, that would be an interesting place for that fight to take place, because you got this stat card, and that is the main event. And you have other really interesting, compelling, and potentially exciting fights under you. And then you have a main event between two wrestlers who are both good strikers. Well, Tyron Woodley is. Kobe's not. he's okay. But you got a potential, like we've talked about, for a really boring fight that has an interesting buildup. So if they go on November's card, it's like interesting fight, interesting fight, interesting fight, exciting, exciting, and then that fight. And so any, like, you know, support or resentment either fighter will get might be shadowed by the quality of the competition. So we'll see. I really don't think that will be the main event, though. I think that's a little bit, even though Tyrone didn't take any damage, it's a little bit of a fast turnaround for him. But, you know, anything's possible. And they've been so quiet about what the main event for that show will be. I could see them just plopping that in there.
That's so ominous, that card. Like, you know, we're getting closer and closer and nothing's announced and still, you know, TBD versus TBD. And every week we come on here and do the process of elimination of fights that just happened and fights are going to be booked and we can't find them. It's like, what is it? Like, what really big secret do they have up to? Like, is Steven Seagal going to be in the main event? Like, what the heck are they doing? He might be in the main event next week, actually, to be perfectly honest with you. But yeah.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, wouldn't that be? Like, and then he comes out, maybe Anderson Silva, you know, turned on him or something. That'd be awesome.
That'd be incredible. I was just trying to think of what heavyweight would be matched up well with him, but that's a good thought.
Yeah, I think you'd have to go outside maybe the world of mixed martial arts. Maybe you could go into pro wrestling, like a Bastion Booger. That's just mean. Now I'm being a jerk. Now I'm being Kobe Covington. Maybe I should stop that. Okay, let's move on to the surprise co-main event. We'll talk about why the scheduled co-main event fell out in the next segment. But a fight that I definitely had circled as one to keep an eye on. And everyone knows I'm the president of the Jessica Andrade fan club, and I was validated once again last night as she just smoked Karolina Kowalkiewicz with one punch at 1 minute 58 of the first round. Straight up KO, Kowalkiewicz, one of those where she's out before she even hits the ground. Jessica Andrade with a big, big victory. What'd you think, Rick?
Yeah, it was sad to see Kowalkiewicz cry afterwards. You don't see that much nowadays, and so that kind of, you know, it's an exciting knockout, but then you're like, oh, there's a person there. That knockout was pretty devastating too, the way that Kowalkiewicz hit her head on the ground, as powerful as the punch was, and then there's a follow-up one that kind of skimmed the temple in the side of the Kowalkiewicz head. But I think where the real damage came was just from her head bouncing like a basketball against the ground. Her eyes were rolled behind her head at one point, and because they did an aerial view, and she was just really knocked out. And I'm glad that Andrade had enough sense to let the ref do his job and call it off like he did, because there was absolutely no need for any follow-up punches. And I was surprised Andrade came out full steam ahead like she does. But she does it all the time. But you don't see that in ladies' fights that much, especially at that weight class. And so she just came in there, blitzed her. It didn't work initially, so she bided her time and then did it again. And it was kind of rock'em sock'em, for the lighter weight. And it was exciting and interesting and probably a lot better of a co-main event than what we would have originally had, to be honest.
Yeah, I could have seen the original one being one-sided, but it might have been that uncomfortable type of one-sided versus this was just a straight-up knockout. Yeah, in real time, I thought it was an early stoppage for about a split second, but it's what you said. It's because her head bounced up right off the mat. I thought she was getting right back up when it happened kind of like in that instant, and then you see it in slow motion, and, you know, she's completely out. They speak about that in the NFL a lot, that sometimes the concussions and the head injuries aren't necessarily the direct hits. It's your head hitting the ground so many times, and that's what we had there. Let's shoehorn something that happened very early in the night, or not early in the night, but in the main event of the prelim card. Yeah, Tatiana Suarez taking out Carla Esparza, and the commentators comparing it to like a Khabib type of performance over Esparza, and it really was like a smothering ground and pound performance. So you had that happen, and you had Andrade getting the big win in the co-main event.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I felt last night's big winner overall was the strawweight division. What are your thoughts on where we are in strawweight now after those two results last night?
Yeah, it's an exciting time, and it's a time where you can take some of these strawweight fighters and market them pretty well because, you know, they produce some exciting highlight showings. And so, yeah, I had a good time watching them, and man, that main event to the prelims was awesome.
Yeah, you have someone like Suarez, who I know she called out Rose, but I think Andrade probably gets Rose next. But yeah, you're talking about Joanna Champion, who now is coming off of a win. I think that would be an extremely interesting fight. And then, like, you know, if you get Andrade versus Rose, and Rose is such an interesting champion at this point with her two victories over JJ. So it's like for a long time that division was good, but it was all around what contender they can bring up to face JJ and then lose. And then once JJ lost, that wasn't the only piece of it, but JJ losing sort of ushered in this era of now everything's wide open and we're getting these matchups to get to the title. We don't have to worry about, okay, well, JJ already went through all these other women. So kind of an exciting time within the strawweight division, and JJ is still a part of it. But like last night, I felt like, wow, there's a fun little infrastructure to that division right now. Something like in the women's bantamweight, we just don't seem to have, where everything is so stagnant. And so that's cool to see that it's seemingly thriving, and there's not a bunch of weight class moving as we thought there might be when the flyweight division was introduced. But that's a whole other story for a whole other segment. Now, in the third fight from the top, and one of the highlight submissions of the night, one of the many knee bars where I joke, you know, people got split in half. Zabit Mashak. God, I was working on it last night when he was saying it. I really do apologize. But everyone knows what I'm talking about when I say Zabit taking out Brandon Davis with that just devastating submission. We had two of these in the same night, and supposedly there only ever been one other one in UFC history. So that just speaks to how weird the night truly was. What do you think of Zabit's performance here?
I thought it was good. I thought that he starts off a little slow, which is fine. He's getting the rhythm of everything. But, you know, there's so much hype behind him right now. People are not critical on whether he wins or loses. It seems like people are critical, like, round to round, minute to minute. Like, oh, he hasn't thrown a punch yet, or, oh, he hasn't done that or this or that. But when it came to round two, he got that knee bar submission, and that was just crazy. Like, you see all the pictures online of, like, the overhead view and everything like that. That's going to be something that follows him for the rest of his career. And I feel bad for Brandon Davis. You know, he comes in a last-minute replacement and was making a good showing for himself in the first round. Some of the judges even gave him the first round. And then he gets one of the most spectacular knee bar submissions put on him. And he's now just going to be seen by the majority of the MMA fans as that guy who got submitted by Zabit.
Yeah, and you know, in a few years there might not be any shame in that, but yeah,
right.
Well, I mean, the aerial shot, like you spoke of in the other fight, just looked like, oh, like people's bodies do not bend in that way. God, that just as painful as can be. In the fight that preceded that, you had Jimmy Rivera and John Dodson, the only fight that went to decision on the main card or the FX prelim card. Pretty standard fare from these two. I think it was what we thought it was going to be. A lot of dancing, not a ton of action. And Jimmy Rivera getting the unanimous decision. I thought maybe it would be a split decision. What do you think, Rick?
I mean, Jimmy Rivera, for the most part, anytime he's won, he only has had one loss, like we talked about with Marlon Moraes. But most of his wins since 2015 have come from either split or unanimous decision for the most part. And so it's not a surprise to me that this is the result, because John Dodson himself is kind of a guy who has been going to split decisions or unanimous decisions when he does win. So it's just, like you said, standard affair, these two going back and forth. And on a card that ended up being so exciting, this was definitely kind of like the bathroom break sort of fight. I kind of was losing interest in it, to be perfectly honest, but I like both of these fighters. It's just, it's not, they don't sometimes always produce the most exciting affairs.
Yeah, and with Dodson, it's a really weird thing, because there was a time when I thought he was very excited, and then it just, he's had exciting fights since then, but there's always something just they're hard to watch. I would say they're just not very pleasing on the eyes. It's not necessarily that they're boring. They're just difficult to kind of digest in a weird kind of way, if that makes any sense at all. Let's talk about the pay-per-view opener, though. Another brutal KO. You had Abdul Razik Alassane taking out Nico Price. A lot of hype on Nico Price going into this, and Alassane just really smoked him. Another one of those knockout blows. I thought, you know, some interesting promo work from Alassane after the fight. What did you think of this one to kick off the pay-per-view portion?
I am, for a second, couldn't figure out who Nico Price. He cut his hair or something like that. I was like, who is this guy? Like, just for like a millisecond, because I'm so used to his ponytail and everything like that. But yeah, he Alassane just cleaned his clock, and that was a pretty highlight, another highlight reel sort of win, and something else that unfortunately Nico Price will be a part of, just that being replayed over and over. And those punches were coming hard too. Like, you just like on my, and even at the bar where all this talking, everything, it just sounded like Alassane was like punching a tree. You know, it just felt like, man, I really glad I wasn't Nico Price in that moment, because that was hard to watch at moments, at times.
Yeah, and what a way to just kick off the pay per view. Sometimes they put the really light fighters in the opener. And if they would have done that, I think we would have had them, you know, the start just wouldn't have been the same. But the way the fight got started, and it was crazy last night how early the pay-per-view ended, because you had all these finishes and it's on pay-per-view. So they're not having to kill as much time as they are like on a televised portion of the card. So a ton going on there as far as finishes on the main card, really night of finishes all the way around with this one. Let's talk about the prelims. We already talked about the main event with Suarez and Esparza. How about the Funk Master, Aljamain Sterling, getting one of his knee bar victories over Cody Stammen? A rare finish for Aljamain. Is this one going to get overshadowed, though, by the Zabit submission?
Yeah, definitely, because Aljamain Sterling, he's an exciting, interesting fighter, but UFC and the fans, for the most part, seem to have more interest in Zabit. It was a cool-looking submission. It's interesting, though, how Aljamain afterwards just started yelling over Cody. You know, I don't know what he said, but when you just blew out a guy's knee, even if you really don't like him, just give him a minute. You know, like Cody tapped out so quickly to that submission. It was almost like as the second like they kind of like fell into that position, Cody was tapping out because he wanted to, you know, walk normally the next day. But I thought it was interesting, exciting fight. It's the one that they ended up choosing to play after the pay-per-view was done with all of its live fights. Like you mentioned, it ended so early. So fans who didn't watch the FX prelims got to see that one. And yeah, I'm happy with the result. I mean, I'm not happy Cody might have a big time injury, but I'm happy it ended the way it did. And it was exciting. I just don't think that it's going to be something we're talking about for weeks and weeks.
Yeah, and it's like, man, if that could have just happened any other night, I think we would discuss it a whole lot more. It just happened on the night with all these finishes and with a more spectacular version of that finish. Like, you know, what are the really weird odds that that would happen? Aljamain fights a lot, and his fights are, you know, it's almost the inverse of the Dotson fights, where they're not always that exciting, but yeah, I'm always giving it my full attention whenever he fights, and I don't know why that is, but that definitely seems to be the case for me, at least, whenever he fights.
It's because there's been a lot of decision losses since 2015. I mean, in the times he wins have been by decision. The only time like there's been a KO involved in one of his fight was last year in December, and he was the victim of it at the hands of Marlon Moraes. So he was one of those guys who used to get a lot of submissions and TKOs, and now he's kind of like been in this lane where he's winning by decision or getting knocked out or decisioned himself in a loss.
Yeah, the only other downside I see to watching your fight is like sometimes you got to put the TV on mute because you just can't hear Matt Serra screaming at the top of his lungs. Oh, God, I can't stand it.
I love that.
Like, that's why I don't listen to UFC Unfiltered. They're probably because I just can't stand Matt Serra and his cadence and the way he sounds. Maybe, I guess, maybe it's the anti-East Coast bias I'm displaying here.
Probably.
All right, the two openers, a couple of second-round KOs. Jeff Neal taking out Frank Camacho and Darren Stewart taking out Charles Byrd. Anything to say on those KOs?
Jeff Neal landed a really, really crisp and good looking head kick. Frank Camacho at one point kind of did that classic thing where he's just doing nothing but like throwing hooks like a rock'em sock'em, like I said before, against Jeff Neal, and Neal was looking like he was landing the more crisp straight lefts. The crowd like popped when Camacho was just screaming at him, "Come on!" You know, and he did that like Sparta sort of moment, but then he got head kicked. So it kind of when you're watching it live, it was cool, but in retrospect, it was like, you know, maybe that wasn't the smartest move in the entire world, because he's just now a GIF on Instagram where he's just getting kicked in the head and falling down. It kind of was like the Ronda Rousey kick, head kick that she got lost by with Holly Holm, just where it's just like that one kick and it's walk away.
Kind of Betch Kohea-y, I guess, to the Holm.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, because, it was just, but man, that was incredible. And then, Charles Byrd got elbowed in the head really hard by Darren Stewart and went down. And Charles Byrd was looking pretty good in the first and some of the second round. But then Darren Stewart just, you know, found his opening and took it. And that's another fight where the punches just sounded so hard. Like whatever camera they were using to cover the finishing sequence was right next to where they were at. And it just... Yeah, it just sounded devastating. I think that because I end up watching that fight at home and not at the bar, but that was a fight where like, man, that sounded like it hurt really, really bad. I felt bad for Charles Byrd at one point because I think that was his hometown too, so the crowd was like dead silent after that fight.
That was brutal. Let's talk about that. We never usually go into the fight pass portion of the card, but I think there was some newsworthy stuff that happened. We were kind of lamenting last week that Diego Sanchez and Jim Miller are fighting these two white guys on the – that is their last name. I'm not just saying that. Craig and Alex, respectively, on the prelim card. But they both got the job done. You had Jim Miller with an awesome submission, very quick, 129 into the first round. And Diego Sanchez getting a big unanimous decision, 30-27s across the board. And I think you could have argued – for an even bigger disparity in the scorecard. What did you think of the two vets last night?
I think that it was a nice showing for both of them. I'm happy they both won. You know, it's not two fights that a lot of people saw, but the people live saw and liked it. So good for them. And it sounds like they'll at least have another fight in their future. But I think this is kind of one of those things like where we're in the glow of the night and the moment, and I don't see this being a career resurgence for either of them, but I'm glad they got the win.
Yeah, and Diego Sanchez can call me a keyboard warrior all he wants. I still want him to retire, even if he looked great last night. But that's always the issue with fighters is they lose brutally and they want to go out on a high note, but then they go and get that high note, and then they feel they can still have a few more fights left in them. So there's kind of no winning at the end of the fight game with a lot of these guys. The fight that seemed to garner the fight of the night honors was the second fight on the fight pass card. Irene Aldana taking out Lucy Poldovia. Very good fight, very back and forth fight. Irene getting the split decision. Did you see this one?
Ironically, the fight of the night is the one I did not watch, so that is definitely one I'm going back to. Luckily, it was on Fight Pass, so it's easily accessible.
Yeah, go watch it. It was very, very entertaining. These women just went for broke. As sometimes I've noticed that with some of the female fights on the Fight Pass portion tend to be like very entertaining, and I don't know if there's any logic to that or that's just randomness, but I find that quite often that the female fights that nobody sees are very, very good.
Yeah, maybe they're coming up from Invicta or whatever, and they're like, let's just put on a showing and get ourselves recognized, because especially because they were in the flyweight division, right?
So
that division, were they in the bantamweight?
Yeah.
They're trying to I'm sorry, you're right.
Bantamweight needs new blood. Yeah. We talk about that all the time, how that division is just a caste system. Nobody goes up and nobody goes down.
It does, yeah. So this is a perfect time. Either if they were in flyweight or bantamweight, it's like those divisions are wide open. I mean, strawweight, you have an exciting, compelling fight. You're still competing with the, you know, the Cadellas, the Torres, the Herrigs. But in flyweight, it's just a random assemblance of athletes at this point. In bantamweight, it's a random assemblance of athletes who have all lost to, like, the top three. So good on them, and I'll definitely rewatch or watch it when I can.
And then not much to say about the opener. It was a decent fight as well, but Jared Brooks taking out Roberto Sanchez. And then Jared Brooks apparently got very sick after the fight, which is kind of wild. But I probably don't need to rewatch that one. Overall, though, what's the rewatchability of this card, Rick?
I think it once it comes out on UFC Fight Pass, you know, how they release their pay-per-views about a month later. I think if you didn't see these fights, you should definitely check them out. As far as ordering the replay goes, if you're listening to this now and didn't watch it, we've already spoiled it for you. So I don't know if I would go that far. But for those of us who actually those few of us who actually ordered this thing or went to a place to watch it, all 120,000 of us probably, we had a good night, you know. So I'm definitely going to rewatch it when it's available legally on UFC Fight Pass. And I'm excited to see some of those highlights again.
A very good card, but not particularly newsworthy. So that's why I don't think you would have to buy the. It's not something you have to see in the immediacy, but a good night of fights and one that, like, you know, if you're going through the way Fight Pass has the fights kind of separated out as you go through, they all last very quickly. You could get through this card in very quick fashion if you just, you know, you wanted to watch college football last night, you wanted to go out and, you know, this wasn't the card to really get your attention, but now you're hearing the buzz about these fights. Won't take a long time to get through, like you said, whenever it's up on Fight Pass. Rick, have you noticed the gif that's been going around of once Woodley got on top of Till and the sad, sour look on Dana White's face?
No. Is that real?
Yeah, it's real, and it's definitely spectacular. Yeah, I don't think it's an actual, like, thing. Like, I don't know if suddenly he got very, very sad. I think he was just kind of focused on the fight. But, you know, it plays into that narrative perfectly. It's Dana with the very sour face as Woodley's on top. Dana didn't even do a press conference last night.
I noticed that. Yeah, I noticed that. Yeah, that press conference was an hour and a half long, and it really only had three fighters, I think. I think it had Andrade and Woodley and Darren Till at the end of it. I mean, could you imagine an hour and a half for three fighters? The press conference of past, I still like that format a lot better than how they do it now. People watching that live stream waiting around for this, it's like, ah, I'm going to bed, you know, and I don't care about the reporters. I would kill to have that job. So no sympathy for them. But yeah, I'm glad I just didn't even bother. Dana White had that same kind of facial expression, if I think of what you're talking about, when Ngannou lost to Stipe in that, like, drastic five-round fight where Ngannou just gassed out and everything.
Yeah.
And
it's that. It's the Amanda Nunes putting the belt on her after she beat Ronda kind of look.
Yeah.
With Dana having this look so often, would you recommend anything for him to medicate himself with to get over this situation he's in?
Yeah, usually what calms my nerves is a nice glass of wine.
Yeah, Dana, I know he says he doesn't drink, but if you know, he ever decides that he just can't take it anymore, I got just the thing for him. Let me tell you about Wink. That's WINC. And what Wink does is it makes it easy to discover great wines. Because Wink's wine experts select wines matched just to your taste, personalized just for you, and shipped right to your door. It starts at just $13 a bottle. There's nothing like, you know, coming home to a box of delicious Wink wine. It really can be the best day of your month. You know, Dana White might not have liked the result too much last night, but whenever his Wink bottle gets here tomorrow, you know, his month, his September, will completely turn around. And all you got to do is fill out Wink's palate profile quiz and answer some simple questions that your average store clerk wouldn't ask or translate into a recommendation. Questions like, how do you take your coffee, or how do you feel about blueberries? Then what Wink does is they'll send you wines that are curated just to your taste. And it's a really reciprocal relationship. You know, the more wines you rate, the more personalized each monthly selection becomes. And each month, there's delicious new wines, like the really popular Summer Water Rose. There's no membership fees. You can skip it any month, and you can cancel it any time. And, of course, shipping is covered. If you don't like the bottle they send you, they'll actually send you another bottle you'll love. And they're not even going to ask any questions about it. They're just going to send it. Discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/PWTorch, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/PWTorch for $20 off. trywink.com/PWTorch. Okay, Rick, let's go to a break. On the other side, let's talk about why the co-main event fell out.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, wait, aren't you going to put any pants on? He just goes, no time for pets, and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. You see, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now for all you know. No time for pants.
The Monster Sounds Off. Since 2007, The Solomonster Sounds Off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Well, Rick, whenever you found out that Nico Montano was not going to make it to the scale on Friday morning, did you just think that this was a validation of all the criticisms that people have had of her over the last couple of months?
Yeah, I've never been so excited to have a co-main event be canceled just to be proven right. But, you know, like we said before, I wasn't proven right, and it was still entertaining. But now I think that this is going to bring up some interesting results. The biggest thing and the biggest outlier being that Nico Montoya is no longer champion.
Yeah, that was the newsworthy part. Not only did we lose the fight, but in the process, Montoya got stripped of the title for her trip to the hospital. Before we talk about the consequences for Montano and the broader topic of weight cutting in MMA, what do you think about the decision to strip her? There's a lot of, I think, good arguments on both sides of this. Where do you come out?
I was looking forward to her losing the title, so I don't really have much emotional investment in seeing her lose it by getting knocked out or by decision or anything like that. I just don't want her to be champion. It's nothing personal or anything like that. I just don't know who she is, and I didn't watch her fight against Roxanne Modafferi, so I don't really care about her title reign. And so for the title be now just positioned to have two different fighters fight for it down the road doesn't bother me at all. And normally this is a situation that would bug me, but I don't care. You know, I just want Valentina either to be champion or for this division to be starting to go somewhere, and I just didn't see it going anywhere with Nico as the title holder.
Yeah, I feel a little bit sour that we just didn't get the fight, because there was a level of curiosity I had about her, because she is such an unknown that, like, maybe she is quite a bit better than we're giving her credit for or discrediting for. So I kind of wanted to see that in action. So I was, you know, somewhat disappointed that we're not going to be able to see what all that was about. As far as the stripping goes, I'm kind of two minds on it, in that, like, they have no standards for their title, and we know that. That's not a new thing that we just realized last week, that, wait a minute, there's no consistency on who they strip and what they leave the belt on. I mean, they left the lightweight belt on McGregor for, like, almost 2 years before they stripped him. And I was not even – if that Dolly hadn't gone through that window, I'm not convinced that they would have actually stripped him by the end of that right. weekend, even though, Dana just kind of kept saying, well, we'll see what happens. So, you know, there is no consistency there. And other guys get stripped right away. Like, you had the thing with Covington where they were going to strip him immediately, even though it had just been months. And then they create these interim titles out of nowhere. So there is no consistency, and we already know that. With that said, the division itself and these fighters, they're not a thing yet. There's no there yet with this. There's not a structure yet. So if you wanted to strip it, I had less of a problem with it, other than unless you're just going to be an absolutist in that you shouldn't do this and keep everything on the level. So I don't necessarily think she deserved to be stripped of the title, because this, like you said, you know, other fighters get hurt. And usually what happens, instead of getting stripped in this situation, it's just an interim belt is populated. Now, it would be a little weird to have an interim belt when you've never even had a defense of the initial belt. That would be a whole other can of worms. But that's just kind of the situation we find ourselves in. So, you know, I just didn't have a take on it. And I really wanted to have, you know, some real definitive take of, like, yeah, I can't believe Dana White did this, and this is so unfair. Or, like, yeah, it was completely the right decision, and there's no reason to shed a tear for Montano in this situation. I just kind of had – I was very agnostic on the whole situation. And I think, like you said, it's this little rain or whatever we call it will just kind of be the tournament that she won in Rio de Janeiro for the Intercontinental title, I guess, in a way. That will just kind of be there, and then they're going to start the division over, a bit of a restart. It's very similar to featherweight in many, many ways, other than at least here you have – a fighter who couldn't fight, you know, because of medical reasons and health reasons, whereas in featherweight you had Jermaine Durandamé just refusing to fight. So that's a completely different situation. But I think the similarities do run there, and they are readily available if you want to look at them. But
yeah, Nico's going to be making the same top 10 list that Jermaine Duranamine's already making when people compile like most unremarkable champions in UFC history or something like that. You know, when you see these top 10 lists, usually Jermaine is close to the top of it, and Nico will probably be a close number two or three. And I do think it's funny, though, you you mentioned possibly making an interim title if they didn't strip Nico and have him Valentina fight for that interim title against someone else. The only problem with that, and I know that's not what you're suggesting they do, but that was just an option. I think through Dana White's eyes, he's like there's such little interest in this women's flyweight title currently, has very little currency with fans, that an interim version will almost be, it'll be like a Vince Russo title at that point. It'll be literally useless, you know? So I think at least if Valentina's fighting some other random person for a held up title, at least it's an official title, not an interim title, because this division, like you said, it has really no solid ground on. So an interim version of this division's title could possibly mean nothing, you know? So at least we'll still see Valentina fight someone for a solid title championship fight. And then if Nico gets healthy, maybe she can come back and fight for that Valentina for that title. I don't really know how long she's going to be out and whatnot. At this point, I feel like Nico quite literally dodged a bullet in this scenario.
Well, that's a heck of a pun you just put up there, Rick. Yeah, let's talk about her side of this, though, because it wasn't just that, you know, she couldn't make weight. She was transported to the hospital before the fight. And apparently, according to the statement she's released, if she were to have continued cutting weight, the doctors feared that she would have gone into cardiac arrest, which is just like, what are we even talking about? Yeah. Like, what's going on here? But you know, it's one of those things. Like we saw this with Darren Till, you know, who was in the main event last night, lost his vision while cutting weight the prior time. We've talked about our discomfort somewhat of seeing Max Holloway compete. His is a little different. He had a pre-fight concussion, but he had issues with his weight cut on the fight. He was pulled out before that. This is just another sort of notch in the we gotta fix weight cutting conversation in this sport. What I'm wondering is it advisable for Montano even to fight at flyweight again if this is going to be the result of a weight cut?
Right. No, I don't think it is advisable. I'm not her doctor or her nutritionist or anything like that. But Valentina, I know people are different, and everybody's body works a different way. Valentina and Nico Montoya are the same size. They're both 5'5". Valentina had no problem making this weight cut. Now, is it something that they're just body types are different, or their diet, you know, going into this fight months and months in the past was different? I don't know what her approach and her method was to cutting this weight, but whatever it was does not work, and she can't find a better way to where, you know, the week of fight week, she's not even sweating and then having to go to the hospital when she's trying to cut weight. She needs to move up, because at a certain point, you know, you get the warning signs, like you get sent to the hospital. That's a big warning sign. Maybe this is not the division for me. But if she chooses to try to make this kind of weight again, that's, in my opinion, kind of on her. You've been given the sign and you've been told, you know, you almost went into cardiac arrest. Maybe flyweight is not where you need to be. Maybe you need to be a bantamweight. And there's no shame in that. Same with Darren Till. It's like, dude, you're a big guy. You have muscle. You're an athlete. You know, 170 might not be something you should be trying to do anymore. And so I just think I agree that weight cutting needs to be fixed and there's needs to be changes. But I also, these fighters are killing themselves. Like Tyron Woodley, you could see the bones in his skull and then it filled back up, you know, when he was actually in the octagon the next day. And it's like some of these guys, as they get older or, you know, as they approach the weight classes and they're just huge, you know, they're the ones a lot of the time trying to make get an advantage by being bigger people in a lighter weight class. And I get that. But if your body's telling you you can't make that weight, you need to listen to it, because some of us don't find this out what's going on with you until you're either rushed to the hospital or passing out on the weight room floor.
Yeah, and it's just a weird thing. I mean, it's something that's unique to MMA and to amateur wrestling. But it's just it's just ridiculous. And, you know, we could say, oh, well, that's just the way it's always been. Well, just because it's always been that way doesn't mean that, it's a positive thing. I do agree, though, that there's not a great answer to solve this. Listen back to the mailbag edition of The Fix with Todd Martin this week. He kind of addressed this, and the gist of what he said is, yeah, there can be solutions, but that once you create the solution, the desire to gain a competitive edge seems like it will always override the you know, the solution. And, it's funny because none of these people are doing anything outside of the rules. So when you talk about, you know, balancing the competitive balance, well, you could put in a drug testing policy or drug tolerance policy, and there's like an arbitrary thing. If you take this in competition, you will not be able to fight. This is a completely different thing, so it has a completely different dynamic because they're not technically doing anything wrong by the letter of the law, but they're, you know, completely destroying their body and jeopardizing their health in the process. And I would say even more than concussions, this is like, you know, concussions might be the big issue for the NFL, and they're obviously a big issue in MMA, but I think the issue where, you know, you start wondering what's up with the health and well-being of the sport and the people in it, I think weight cutting is a far bigger issue for MMA.
Yeah, and then, I mean, weight cutting's an issue. It's a health risk, but also getting kicked in the head is also a big health risk and issue as well. And you get concussions from this. We're trying to make this sport as safe as possible in the weight cutting sense. And, you know, we don't like to see people get rushed to the hospital. But, you know, people are getting their limbs broken and eyes sockets disconnected and stuff. Like, this is it's a hurt sport. And I just wish, like you're saying, that we could make at least one aspect of it more safe, the weight cutting. But if these guys are willing to get in there and just go to war and pound on each other, they're probably not too worried about losing weight drastically quick. And I think that one day someone's going to get more than just hospitalized, and that'll be the big wake-up call to MMA. I hope it doesn't happen, but I know it has in MMA in the past, but more on a regional scale and not really in the United States. And if and when that does happen, I think things will be implemented.
Right. And to bring it back to like a pro wrestling reference or framework, there was wrestling deaths throughout the late 90s, early 2000s in abundance. They happened all the time. However, once Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit passed away, those are big time names, champions on the biggest show in the mainstream. And that's when I felt like the momentum, at least publicly, started moving, like, hey, you know, this business needs to change, this industry needs to change, there needs to be, you know, some parameters and some guidelines. And so, like you said, that might be the point. You just don't want to get to that point in the first place, because then something very bad has to happen to someone. And to your point too about, yeah, it's all dangerous because, you know, you're getting kicked on the side of the head, I agree with that, and it's, you know, it's very true. You can't whitewash the violence out of MMA, and you can't pretend that the violence isn't the appeal of MMA to the wider audience. With that said, I think, like, you can't do MMA without the risk of concussion. That just doesn't – it would be nice if you could, but I don't think that's a possibility. It feels like there's a world where you can do MMA without the risk of extreme weight cutting. Like, I don't think you have to have one. Like, that's not a necessity. The way – it's kind of, you know, that the health risk to your head is just – An absolute inherent part that the sport can't exist without it. I think the sport could still exist without these weight cutting measures. But I say that, but it's a hollow statement by me because I'm offering no real solutions to fix the problem.
Right. Plus the drastic weight cut. You know, you're all emaciated and dehydrated. Then it can't help. That can't help the fact that you also might get knocked out. So it's like, what is a healthy body that is not emaciated, that does have water in it? What's the damage like there to the brain in comparison to when you're trying to make 145 pounds and you naturally weigh 170 pounds and you go in there all dehydrated, lack of water in your system, no electrolytes, and then you get knocked out? It's like, I'd imagine, I'm not a doctor, but the results are much worse.
Yeah, I mean, like any, you know, we're on opening day of the football season. All these football players are there, want to be ideally in their peak physical condition, and they're not going to want to achieve that by being extremely dehydrated in the day prior and, you know, losing their vision in the training just to get to that day. It's a completely backwards concept of what athletics kind of is intended to be, I think, in many respects. Let's go to a break, Rick, and then when we come back, let's break down the UFC's debut into Russia.
So support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Rick, it's finally here. We've been talking about this UFC card in Moscow for seemingly like 4 months. I think we're the only podcast that's within like the continental United States that can claim to have talked about this card for that long. But it's finally here this Saturday. Hunt versus Olenek is the main event, and it is the debut into Russia. I know Russia is a hot topic in news unrelated to MMA, but it is a hot topic in MMA as well because a lot of history within Russia and some big stars that are native Russian. We talked about Zabit last night, the Dagestani. You have Khabib going to be on the biggest card, you know, in the last couple of years. Fedor Emelianenko, of course, the legendary heavyweight. So there's a lot of history that region with fighting. You know, even when you take out the geopolitical implications that are always at play in MMA and in society in general. Pretty good main event though. We have the rest of the card kind of. It's one of those, it is what it is. It's a fight pass card in the middle of the afternoon, so, you know, it's not going to be viewed by a ton of people. But you got Mark Hunt taking on Alexei Olenek in the main event. This should be a pretty decent fight. Hunt, as he's gotten into his 40s, he still follows his pattern of win one, lose one, win one, lose one, but always dangerous. Is Hunt going to roll here?
No, I think that Olenek will actually win. And I don't think he'll win. Actually, yeah, I'm going to say, I think he won by Ezekiel choke. I think a lot, he's been getting these rear naked chokes and Ezekiel chokes quite a bit in the first rounds, too. I don't know if it'll be round one for him, but he might drag Mark Hunt into deep waters and choke him out, and we might have a ruckus and loud Russian crowd celebrating at the end of the night.
Yeah, that'd be crazy. Does Dolph Lundgren come and congratulate him at the end?
Yeah, exactly. It gives them a big high five and everybody leaves happy. And us in the United States, at least in the West Coast, are watching this at 2 p.m. and being like, okay, going to the rest of my day now. Yeah, this is a weird start time for it. Like you said, it's not too bad on the West Coast. I mean, the fight pass prelims start at 7:30 a.m. And then you could probably be looking at this fight card being wrapped up by 2 p.m. Pacific. So I like that. You know, sometimes we need things like that. It'd be a nice Saturday card, and then you can just go on your day. I wish they would do this more often.
Yeah, I wish they would do this with more appealing cards, just so that way you would see. No, but it's true. Then it's just like, oh, it's this underwhelming card at a weird time of day, but I'm stuck watching because I watch everything. If Mark Hunt wins, though, does he give a big old speech that saying that if he can change and you can change, everybody can change?
Yeah, I would suggest against doing that, Mark Hunt, but we'll see. I think if he wins, he'll have a knockoff. A walkaway knockout, and just walk straight out of that.
Just leave, get right on the plane. That'd be great showmanship. Always by Mark Hunt. Still in active litigation against the UFC. We have to always mention that when we talk Mark Hunt, but still main eventing several of their cards. Amazing how the world of MMA works. Now, earlier in the show, I gave out the email address. That is MMALivecast@gmail.com. And we got an email this week. We got an email from one of the best friends of the show. If there's four official members of the show, I think we have our fifth member, our sixth man, if you will. Valentin from Russia sent us an email. And he's all in on this card, obviously, you know, close proximity to it. So he sent us an email with some perspective. So instead of me and Rick going down this card and breaking down what it is, look, we're going to get Valentin's take from his email and just use that as kind of our primer for this card. So I'll read. Hey guys, it's Valentin from Russia, and today I'm sending you some quick notes on the UFC Fight Night Moscow card. Jan Błachowicz and Nico Krylov is probably the most interesting fight on the card for me. Krylov is coming back to the UFC after a couple of fights in Russia, and it seems like he may be in a good position in the light heavyweight division. Andrei Arlovsky told Russian media that he's considering bringing the American flag to his walkout in the fight against Samil Abrikantimov because he wants to troll the crowd. we'll see. It might be interesting. I think the crowd's getting trolled by getting the Andrei Arlovsky fight, but that's neither here nor there.
Right.
Alexei Konechko is making his UFC debut against Thiago Alvarez. Konechko is the M1 welterweight champion, and M1 recently announced a partnership with the UFC. Now, every M1 champion can sign a deal with the UFC, so M1, which is mostly known for promoting Fedor in the past, basically became a UFC developmental territory. Konechko is a very good all-around fighter, but he is mostly known for his technical striking. Speaking of prelims, the most interesting fighter is Peter Yarn, who was a very exciting ABC bantamweight champion. ABC is the biggest Russian promotion, and he was one of the fighters who put it on the map. He's probably the most exciting Russian prospect since Zabit. Keep an eye out on that. Yeah. The weirdest fight of the night for hardcore Russian MMA fans is Jordan Johnson versus Adam Yolandif. Yolandif is considered more of a celebrity than an MMA fighter. His last MMA bout was 2 years ago, and since then he's been appearing in rap videos and stuff like that. But for the general audience in Russia, he's a pretty well-known guy. So that's probably the reason why the UFC signed him for this card. Thanks, as always. Well, thanks, Valentin. That's actually a pretty interesting breakdown, and much better than I think Rick and I could have given on that card. It actually gets me a little more hyped for the card in a weird way.
Yeah, thanks, Valentin. The only thing I had to talk about besides the main event in this card is the lack of a poster. So we really appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm totally into this guy that appears in rap videos to see what he's going to do. Speaking of, Tyron Woodley's single is out this week, so we might have to break that down on the podcast next week.
Yeah, I'll make sure to listen to that. And
according to Ariel Helwani, it's pretty good. Yeah. But I don't like rap, so that's...
Neither do I. Not that there's anything wrong with rap. I especially don't like rap from a UFC fighter who I'm just starting to re-care about.
Okay, but I'll say this. I have a weird relationship with rap where I have a lot of, like, quote unquote, respect for it, respect for the bass lines and all. It's just not my cup of tea. With that said, I will listen to whatever Tyron Woodley puts out over that crap that Enzo put out a couple of months ago. So I think, you know.
That's fair.
It's going to sound like Tupac and Biggie in contrast to that stuff that Enzo put out a couple of months ago. Rick, this weekend we got the WWE's Hell in a Cell pay-per-view coming at us quick, man. Just kind of hit us out of nowhere. We feel like we just discussed SummerSlam not that long ago on this show. Pretty interesting main event. You got Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. Roman Reigns, fully back in the Shield sort of world. You have Braun Strowman turned heel, aligned himself with Ziggler and McIntyre, cashing in his championship. Is there, you got any reason to believe that Strowman could walk out of here with the title?
I don't have any reason to think that. I think that there's going to be some shenanigans and this feud will just be prolonged.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see what they're doing. I give him some credit in that, like, when Strowman won the Money in the Bank, I thought, okay, well, then he's clearly going to be champion, you know, at some point within the next year. But I also don't think they would take the belt off of Roman 1 month after, you know, putting it on him after, you know, this 4-year coronation that they're building it as. So in that case, it's actually it's interesting and there is consequence. We got Ronda Rousey, who will be on Raw tomorrow night wrestling in a tag match and then taking on Alexa Bliss in a singles match. Ronda's been interesting. She really has kind of just integrated into the product for good and bad, in that, like, she's getting comfortable what she's doing. At the same time, I kind of forget that she's like this MMA star, this big star, because she's on TV so much. Where do you come out on where we are with Ronda at this point?
She's just going along at the speed of traffic with everybody else at this point. I was looking as you were talking to the we got the Super Show in Australia coming up, but then we got WWE Evolution, which I'd imagine Ronda Rousey will be a featured person in that. And on the poster, it has Charlotte Flair front and center, and Ronda Rousey is just to the left by Asuka, you know, and opposite her is Alexa Bliss. So she's just part of the pack now. On that poster, she's not even really featured as prominently as Charlotte Flair is. So it's just... it's not a bad thing necessarily. You know, you don't want all this attention brought on her and people to start resenting her this quickly. But it's just amazing, like how you said, she's just kind of become one of the WWE wrestlers. And I think that is a good thing and a bad thing at the same time.
Yeah, it's always just that tension. Like, you want her to still appear to be special, which I think she is, because we still haven't seen her in a real match just yet. So there's still intrigue to that. But at the same time, Yeah, she's not sucking the oxygen out of the division, which I think is a good thing on balance.
We do need to see her in a real, real match at some point, and I think the quickest and easiest answer for that is after this Alexa Bliss match. If they want to have her and Alexa Bliss fight again, they need to throw someone else into this scenario. Ronda Rousey could benefit from having a triple threat, or sorry, a three-way match, and then kind of let the other two do a lot of the heavy lifting and just get in spots there. And people, that would come off as a real, real match, in my opinion, because I think we're some time away from having her have a 12-minute, not even classic, just like a four-star match.
Yeah, and it's funny, like they're doing like the squash match formula, but with her as the champion. Like they're basically giving her the Goldberg push, but Goldberg had to beat, like, you know, Hugh Morris in his first match. They're kind of doing the championship version of that. Which I'm glad they're doing that instead of just putting her out there for like a 15-minute match, and then, you know, it just soils her value immediately. That would not be good.
I think Goldberg had more interesting moves, though, you know, in the sense where, and I know you're just, that's just like a quick comparison, but I agree with that comparison. I just still think Ronda, while she's getting either the, like you said, the Goldberg or, you know, name whatever push superstar that they had at the time. I'm sorry, I can't believe it was a wrestler at the time. And
that's a demerit.
Gave him a win streak. Yeah. I think that Ronda Rousey still needs more interesting moves. I think her pump handle throw is still a sloppy, depending on who she's sending it to. Her armbar submission, while it makes sense, is not always the most exciting thing to see in wrestling. So I would love for them to, doesn't even have to be power moves. It doesn't even have to be like, you know, like Goldberg's devastating concussion sidekick, or, you know, he used to do some suplexes himself. You know, she doesn't have to do stuff like that. But I would like something where they can figure out more jiu-jitsu style moves that can become more trademarks and less kind of throwy, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. And, you know, we still have time, I think. It's, and from what she said, she hasn't become disillusioned with this at all thus far. And so if she sticks with it, you know, who knows what she'll be in 5 years. Are we going to be looking back and like, oh, silly, we thought she couldn't work? Or, you know, is she going to go through a rough patch and then, you know, kind of decide, I got a ton of money and I want to ride out into the sunset? It's still a big unknown with her in general. We did get the report this week, though, that Daniel Bryan has re-signed with the WWE the long term. I don't think that's as much of a shock. I think people who thought he wasn't going to re-sign, I think that was wishful thinking. I think people really wanted to see him in Japan mixing it up with the new generation of indie wrestlers. I never for a second thought he wasn't going to re-sign. Just if anything else, like his, you know, it's so important, the role his wife has with the company. So I think we're going to see the end of Daniel Bryan's complete prime within the WWE. Is that a thumbs up or thumbs down from you?
I think that this makes sense. His wife is involved in their match coming up. I mean, like, this is kind of like the lane he's going to be in. And unfortunately, even with him re-signing with WWE, I don't see them pushing him like they did in the past when they had to. I think that he's going to kind of just be where he's at now, hopefully getting a couple more wins, but maybe even getting a win over AJ Styles and becoming WWE champion at some point. But yeah, I don't see Daniel Bryan's hands raised at the end of a WrestleMania with everybody cheering and the Yes Movement having a second go.
I don't necessarily see that either, but I think the difference now, though, is like that just, like, you know, that was the big momentum and the push and the resistance and all that was happening at that point. I think now, though, Bryan isn't kind of in that, like, Randy Orton spot where even if he's mm-hmm. not the focus every week, it's implied on television that he's, you know, he's one of the top guys. He's, you know, a legendary competitor who could win the title at any point. He's not positioned as like the by golly guy who just happened to get lucky to be where he's at, like he was in the past. So I think that's the positive there. And he doesn't go the indie route. Indie wrestling will be fine without him. And I still think like a lot of these guys will probably filter into WWE at some point. So you'll get some of these matches that you want to see on the indie scene. You just don't get to see them in the context of the indie scene where they're given so much time and are allowed to do everything possible. But at the same time, we know that if Daniel Bryan is allowed to do everything possible, he absolutely will, and then he'll have to be out for 2 years. So you kind of got to pick your poison with him.
Yep.
All right, Rick, let's close it out there. You got anything coming up on the horizon? Or are we still going to wait for UFC 229 to hear from the MMA nerd again?
UFC 229 is when the MMA nerd will make his full return. But as usual, since I have nothing to plug, I'll plug again the UFC 228 live report that Cole Henry wrote up the night before. It was, again, interesting to follow along with that as I was watching the fights live. So thank you to him. And thank you, Robert, for steering the ship, and had fun. And I look forward to next week.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to next week as well. We got the Moscow card to break down. We might have Hell in the Cell to break down, depending on when we record. But you can follow me on Twitter, Rob M. Vallejos, RobMVallejos. And then check out our other co-host. Check out Sean Ennis and his podcast, Stories of Yours and Your. Check out Zach Hadorn. He's on the canvas at the VIP section of the show. He was on with us last week. Hopefully he'll be on again in the next couple of weeks with us. And, of course, follow the big brands at MMA Torch. That's at MMA Torch. And MMA Livecast at MMA Livecast. Go ahead and check out all the Torch-affiliated websites, PW Podcast. Go ahead and check out the Livecast website. They got a ton of new content with the Talking Honor guys actually breaking down the Mae Young Classic, which I haven't seen the first episode yet, so that's why we didn't talk about it here today. But we got that going on, a lot of coverage on that, a lot of coverage from All In, from the people that were there, and then the people that observed it. It's Sean Radican, Wade Keller, Zach Hadorn, all breaking that down. And, of course, don't forget to go VIP and dig through those archives and listen to all the great audio that we got going on there. But that's going to do it for us this week. So for Rick and Robert, we will talk to you again next week.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including the review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.